Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined by Mr. Aaron Zommers on the ones and twos. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with our Wisconsin Revolution. Aaron, how you doing on this cold and a little dreary Wednesday afternoon?
Yeah, feeling good on a Wednesday.
I'm going to play that every time, but I am feeling good on a Wednesday today, the most Wednesday of the week, even if it is not the best Wednesday. But last night I went to a concert that was really fun. It was for Thelma and the Sleaze, which if I had to describe their sound and their whole vibe succinctly, I would say lesbian Led Zeppelin.
Interesting. Well, you had a good time, right?
Absolutely.
My all right, that's all that matters.
Because
well,
if
you need me to speak up, give me a holler.
No, all good. I just forgot my earplugs.
I like the feeling good on a Wednesday clip and then immediately noting this soundbite might not accurately reflect my feelings on this exact Wednesday.
It does this time.
All right. Well, he's feeling good on a Wednesday. It's the most Wednesday of the week, as we discussed. We got some fun headlines that we want to get to today, and we're going to be joined by Dan Schaefer at 12:30 for some general recombobulation, as we always do on a Wednesday. But, Aaron, I wanted to start today with a piece over from the AP. Former Speaker Paul Ryan says Republicans will lose if Donald Trump is nominee. Now, this is something that if you follow politics at the national level, this conversation has been going on across both political parties. A lot of, you know, quote unquote insiders have been saying this in regards to Joe Biden as well. Oh, Biden cannot win. You can't nominate Biden or Democrats will get swept. And a lot of Republicans have been saying same thing in regards to Donald Trump. Now, former House Speaker Paul Ryan has joined in that chorus. Obviously, Paul Ryan is a Wisconsin boy himself, so this Wisconsin is once again at the forefront of the political conversation. And reading over from the piece written up by Scott Bauer and published last night, former House Speaker Paul Ryan said Tuesday, Republicans will lose the presidential election if Donald Trump is the nominee. And this is another key and, he expects hard right followers of Trump to force a government shutdown within days. As we noted last week, I believe we had the conversation regarding a government shutdown, what it means, the details of it, when it can be expected. That would be, I believe the government shutdown would occur 11:59 on September 30th going into October 1st as the new fiscal year for the U.S. government begins. Paul Ryan, who left office in 2019 and had a sometimes contentious relationship with Donald Trump, said that he hoped another Republican nominee would gain enough momentum early next year to overtake Trump in the first primaries. Ryan, of course, represented southeastern Wisconsin in Congress for 20 years, the last four of which he was the speaker. He was quoted as saying, "The party that puts the first fresh face forward wins this election," he said at an event at University of Wisconsin campus, organized by the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs. If the race is between Trump and President Joe Biden, Ryan says, I think Biden wins. So this conversation, Aaron, I'd like to hear what you think, people of Wisconsin. Is this a race to the bottom? Is this a continuation of the, I'd say, American tradition, if you look at the last couple cycles, of voting for the quote-unquote lesser evil that a lot of middle Americans, moderate Americans, let's say, tend to find themselves doing? Or is this just the best that American politics has to offer? Give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app, calling or texting. Via the app, head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download.
Yeah, definitely. Very useful app. And I do want to point out that he had some good alliteration in there. Bring the first fresh face forward. A lot of Fs. But also, I sure hope this is not the best that America has to offer. And we know it's not. It's just that a lot of the good people are being forced out and resigning or retiring because of all this just nonsense. It's impossible to be sensible right now.
Well, it's something we've talked about in the past, right? First past the post voting, it encourages concentrated viewpoints because in a lot of these races, obviously the presidential race notwithstanding, but a lot of these congressional races, a lot of the state legislature races across the country, you are going to win in the general by winning the primary if you are in a quote-unquote safe district, right? So your only goal then is to win the primary. Well, what can you do to differentiate yourself in a potentially crowded primary? You need to cater to the more extreme ends of the base. And I think we're seeing this throughout the United States in a number of stereotypically safe conservative districts, that each one of these candidates are trying to out-radicalize the other. They're trying to cater to the very, very ends of the political spectrum, knowing that all they got to do is be able to energize the base enough to come out in the primary, and they're guaranteed to win in the general. And it's not healthy. It's really, really not healthy for the long-term, sustainable success of American democracy.
Absolutely not. It's very frustrating, that's for sure.
And remember, Aaron, as well, that there's only 5 days now, well, less than 5 days, to go before Saturday's government shutdown deadline, 3 days now. The Senate is trying to stave off a federal closure as hard right lawmakers seize control of the House. Senators unveiled a bipartisan stopgap measure to keep offices funded temporarily through November 17th to allow Congress time to finish its work. But so far, it's not looking like this is likely to pass.
The whole government shutdown thing, then the way that it's been playing out the last few times it happened, this potential time included, is very much like one of my sisters when I was younger. If we'd get into an argument, she would clamp her hands over her ears and just be like, I'm not listening to you. And that made me upset more than anything else, which is why this makes me so upset, because that's all they're doing. They're just like, nope, we're not going to work together. I'm not listening to you, and just shut down the government. And it affects so many people's lives.
Well, and shutting down the government, and you know, another conversation that we have had in the past, it benefits a lot of these, a lot of the more extreme right-wing members of the House in particular, whose entire worldview is predicated on the government being ineffective or inefficient. They're attempting to privatize everything, and they're able to, in their minds, you know, show that their worldview is correct by saying, look, here, the government can't even keep itself open. How do you expect it to help or run your life? Which is ironic because they are the ones directly causing this government shutdown, right? It's almost, it would be funny if it wasn't so sad, and if it wasn't right. So, if there weren't so many human lives that are going to be directly impacted by this. It's very troublesome, and it worries me for the future. Is this a situation that we're going to see now yearly? Is this going to become the norm? Is this going to become expected or regular, that we're going to have these budgetary fights year after year after year? Every year it gets a little bit worse. The envelope gets pushed a little bit further. Remember that during the Trump administration, we had the longest government shutdown in United States history. What was it, 135 days or something?
Something stupid like that.
Right. And if this is something that we're going to have to come to expect, we're going to see a lot of services and programs be significantly affected, which, of course, will directly impact the lives of millions of American citizens. And if this happens enough, I think there will be a significant subset of the population that will start to take it to heart. They'll start to believe, well, yeah, of course the government doesn't work, because remember how often they're shutting down now? Every year this happens. They shut down for a month, for 2 months, for, you know, however long it may be. I'm not able to enjoy it, so what's the point of even having it around? And at that point, you know, these individuals, the House Freedom Caucus, these the right-wing elected officials that have been trying to push that narrative, you know, what they're trying to push will have come to fruition, and it's a scary thought.
It's just that Eric Andre meme where it's like he shoots Hannibal and it's like, someone shot Hannibal. Who would do this?
Who would do this? Exactly.
It's they're exactly. Shooting themselves and the government and the people of America in the foot, and then being like, wow, look what Biden did. I can't believe that he would shut the government down personally and ruin my day. I had nothing to do with this.
ruin my day and ruin your day. That's what's more important, American right. people. You need to remember he ruined your day through my, you know, direct intervention. But we're not going to have that conversation. And it kind of goes back to something we talked about yesterday as well, Aaron. At the end of the day, you, me, the average people, the working class people of Wisconsin, anyone that's not, you know, the small handful of billionaires, we do not have a say in who's on the board of directors for any Fortune 500 company. We're never going to be able to directly impact the way that these companies approach their day-to-day lives, but we can impact who represents us in government. We are still a representative democracy. We are a constitutional republic. We have the ability to pick and choose which individuals represent us in our government, and as long as we have that power, we still have the ability to pick and choose different representatives if the current representatives are not doing their job to our liking. Remember that we are their boss. They serve at the behest of the people. Power comes from the consent of the governed. And if we do not like the way we are being governed, it is our duty, our responsibility as citizens in a democratic society to change that. And there are tons of opportunities to get involved. There are local organizations throughout not only Wisconsin, but the United States. Pick and choose. Find an entity that shares your worldview, that has similar long-term goals, that wants to see our communities and our society better reflect in a more just and equitable manner that which we expect from our communities. Get involved, do the work on the ground. Grassroots organizing is still fundamental to long-term sustainable democracies. And I think the last, we'll say seven-ish years, really, since the 2016 election, the amount of engagement that I've seen from regular Americans that might have been politically apathetic prior, it's been off the charts, Aaron. People that have not cared about politics for their entire lives have suddenly got involved. We're starting to see decisions, you know, Roe v. Wade might be the best example.
Right,
that
right.
For years we were told, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Nothing will happen. They can't overturn Roe v. Wade. They wouldn't do that. And then they did. And now millions of women have less rights today than their mothers and grandmothers had, you know, 30, 40, 50, 70 years ago.
And that those mothers and grandmothers fought hard for, too.
And exactly. They fought incredibly hard to get the right to bodily autonomy, only to have it stripped away from them. And now we need to, you know, take up that mantle. The torch has been passed. It is our time to get organized, to get involved at the ground level. Find a place that suits you. Let's get to work, people of Wisconsin. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We're going to be joined by Dan Schaefer right after the break for some general recombobulating. This is Town Call. We'll be right back.
A fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man.
Milwaukee's best.
It's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity.
Hey man, what about Milwaukee, man?
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
And it lies between the pit of a man's fears and the summit of his knowledge.
What do you think about Milwaukee?
This is the dimension of imagination. You are now entering the recombobulation area.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. We are joined by Mr. Dan Schaefer on this Wednesday afternoon for some general recombobulation. Dan, I love the intro. It gets better every time. And I make that joke every time because it's true every time, all right? And I am incapable of telling a lie. How are you doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
Doing well, Will. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Always enjoy that wonderful introduction that we have here on Town Call.
It's just so great. And Dan, as our resident Mr. Milwaukee here, there's some big news in the sporting world as of yesterday. The Milwaukee Brewers clinching the NL Central. How excited are you to be able to get another playoff run for the Brewers? I believe that's our third in the last 6 years.
Yeah, third division championship in the last 6 years, fifth playoff appearance in the past 6 years. It's an exciting time to be in Milwaukee. We spent so long as Brewer fans being on the outside of the playoff picture, and it sure is nice to be on this side of it and to have some October baseball coming to Milwaukee in the weeks ahead here.
Mm-hmm. Nothing beats October baseball. It's also the second division crown in the last 3 seasons. So the Brewers have been the team to beat in the NL Central. And Dan, I went back to try to find some numbers to kind of provide context, I guess, to how impactful these type of runs can be. I wasn't able to find any estimates for this year, but I was able to find some Milwaukee Business Journal pieces noting beyond ticket sales, how the Milwaukee Brewers playoff runs will boost business. Obviously, in 2018, we had that magical run to the NL Championship. Unfortunately, we were defeated by the Dodgers, but the amount of revenue that can be generated from a run like that is pretty crazy. The piece notes that much of the national media coverage has focused on the Brewers' success in Major League Baseball's smallest market within Metro Milwaukee and the entire state of Wisconsin. The Brewers' positive energy has spread like wildfire, resulting in, at the time, Miller Park attendance of 2.85 million, which ranked 10th. In all of Major League Baseball, out of the 30 Major League Baseball teams, regular season television ratings on Fox Sports Milwaukee had increased 37% that year and ranked among the highest for MLB teams. So, you know, if you want to have the conversation regarding stadium funding as well, the Brewers clearly are beloved, not just by the city of Milwaukee, but by Wisconsin as a whole. It kind of reminds me of the grass is not always greener. To leadership, right? You're not going to find another place that loves you quite like Milwaukee loves you. The Brewers contract with Fox Sports paid about $20 million per year and ran through 2019, so that deal has since been renewed. But we are talking millions and millions of dollars generated outside of just ticket sales for local businesses as well. The quote from, I'm gonna mess up this name here, but you might be able to help me. Schlesinger?
Rick Schlesinger, I believe.
Schlesinger, that sounds a lot better, yeah. He said, quote, "We're expecting significant increase in our season ticket base and overall attendance post that season," and called merchandise gains themselves, quote, "stratospheric." So the Brewers at the time had declined to release raw data showing how much more merchandise sale they had generated, but they surpassed all benchmark for retail that they had even envisioned with that 2018 playoff run. Hopefully we can recapture some of that magic going forward this year.
Yeah, it's going to make a huge impact. You know, it's great to see. You know, I live on the side of town in Milwaukee, where we're, you know, close to the stadium, always a great increase in activity around town here, and it's going to be great to see, you know, what happens. Hopefully they can extend this run. I think, you know, like you mentioned, all those numbers in 2018 pointing to how much of an impact the deep playoff run would make. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if they can win a series, if they can push it to the NLCS, if they can even make a run to the World Series. How great would that be? You know, not only for fans of the team, but for the local economy, for the state economy as well. So it's an exciting time. Brewers baseball, you know, it's for me as a Brewers fan, like I was especially tied to the 2011, the era with Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder and all
Braun
that.
And Prince.
I'm still wrapping my head around a Brewers team that has dominant pitching and kind of iffy hitting. I'm used to a Brewers team that, you know, they get a lot of power hitting, a lot of runs, but maybe some iffy pitching. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if the big three starters can hold up and power them through to some wins in the playoffs.
Yeah, you sound like reserved, like. I'm excited, but I'm a Brewers fan, so at the same time, I'm keeping my expectations reasonable. It's incredibly exciting for Milwaukee as a whole, right? The Bucks and the Brewers, like, growing up, they were always kind of, I don't want to say the bottom of the barrel, but for a long time, both franchises really struggled throughout my childhood. Now, 2011 was my junior year in high school, so we did get really behind that Brewers team as well because they had been so bad for so long. It was a lot of fun to be able to jump on that train. But now, both teams have been quite successful for the past couple of years. Milwaukee has become re-energized. We have a ton of fun activities to do, such as hanging out around the Forum, and you know, obviously AmFam's a little bit out of the way, but there's plenty going on in Milwaukee. And if these runs are able to continue year after year, if we're able to build on this success, it's going to be a great time to be a citizen of Milwaukee. So, Dan, jumping into the meat and potatoes conversation of the day, I had to give your Brewers a shout out, though, as long as we had Mr. Milwaukee here. You found a piece over from the Bulwark, Wisconsin's trickle-down jerkonomics. Robin Voss, Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, has a long-standing commitment to smash-mouth politics. The state is worse off for it, written up by Bill Luters. This is a conversation that we have had on the show with you frequently, discussing the impact of Robin Voss and his attempts to consolidate power at the state level and how it's impacting us throughout the state of Wisconsin. What were the most noteworthy aspects of this piece that you found worth covering?
Yeah, I think this is such an interesting piece from Bill Leaders at the Bulwark, and talking about, you know, just the big picture of Robin Voss's approach to governing. You know, he's the most powerful Republican in the state. He's the longest serving assembly speaker in state history. And as this piece really gets into, he's kind of a jerk. And maybe you could remove the qualifier kind of from that characterization there as well. You know, a number of examples here shared of talking about Voss as being prickly, talking about him as, you know, just having governance by temper tantrum. Vintage Voss, the article reads, quote, peevish, petulant, and reflexively retributive. My goodness, is that a good way to characterize his
approach? Busted out the dictionary to find the best possible terminology with that one.
Yeah, as a writer, I'm jealous of the writing in this piece. As an observer of Wisconsin politics, I think it's an apt description of the way Robin Voss approaches to government. And I just think this piece, you know, should start a conversation about what leadership should be for Republicans in Wisconsin going forward. Because we know it's a purple state. We know there's going to be, you know, often it will be divided government, regardless of what the maps look like. You know, we've moved on from Scott Walker in the state. We've moved on from a lot of the leadership that was, you know, prominent in that era in Wisconsin from 2010 to 2018. But we still have Voss. 5 years later, we still have Voss. He's still the most, he's still calling all the shots. He's still, you know, a more powerful, larger voice than his Senate counterpart, Devin Lemieux, and so many of the other leaders in the Wisconsin State Assembly and the Wisconsin State Senate. So much of that goes through Voss. And I think this article
prides himself on that shadow governor tag.
He absolutely does. And I think this article and others like it, and the criticism that Voss has received this year, in particular with the impeachment talks, with so many of the, you know, the smash mouth politics that he has brought to governing in the state, I think should lend itself to a conversation about what Republican leadership in Wisconsin should look like going forward. I think, you know, Voss has been so singularly a part of this. You know, should, when is he ever going to pass the torch? When is another leader, you know, perhaps going to step up? Are they going to ever call for a change in leadership in the assembly? You know, I think these are the types of things that Republicans in Wisconsin should be asking themselves when you have this leader who's so unlikable and brings such a terrible brand of politics to Wisconsin government.
And has reflected, you know, poorly on Wisconsin at the national level. The piece notes that the blowback to Voss's impeachment threat has been, quote, astonishing, with places like the New York Times calling it breathtaking contempt for the will of the voters, cementing the reputation of the state's Republican Party as, quote, the most openly authoritarian in the country. Letters to the editor have appeared in local papers such as the Wisconsin State Journal, where an editorial piece noted Voss's intimidating talk of taking her down is wildly irresponsible, undemocratic and comes off as desperate. These are pieces that people across the country are seeing. It reflects back on Robin Voss. I don't know if he has the ability to look in a mirror and self-reflect in any way, shape, or form. But if I'm the Wisconsin Republican Party, I'm seeing this, I'm hearing this, I'm noting what people think of my leadership and, you know, my potential to win elections in the future. And you gotta believe the question has come up.
Yeah, there is going to be a day when Robin Voss is not the assembly speaker in Wisconsin, right? You wonder, reading pieces like this, if that day is sooner than we might think. You know, he's, of course, in a safe Republican district in Racine County. He's, of course, has a lot of other legislators who have supported him over the years. But eventually, there's going to be a change, you know. And I was joking on Twitter yesterday, too. Saying like we need to maybe consider term limiting assembly speakers, future, you know, just to prevent Wisconsin from future Robin Vosses. So I think, you know, a piece like this should start a conversation about what's happening going forward. Because just as somebody who follows this closely, I just think so many of the proposals and so much of what's happening in Wisconsin government, I think we could be getting more done with different leadership, even if it was somebody with similar values, similar politics, similar ideology. It's just Voss's singular. We're trying really hard not to swear here on the air. Voss's singular approach to governing, I think, you know, causes so many problems. And it's just like, what would it look like if Lemahieu had more of a say in state government? You know, what would it look like if, you know, some of the leadership in the assembly, like Tyler August or some of these others who are part of leadership, what would it look like if they were driving the ship instead of Robin Voss? I'd be interested to see what that looks like. I think we might be able to find more compromise, get more done, have fewer of these, you know, tumultuous moments that Voss is invited to politics in Wisconsin.
Yeah, in throwing his sister under the bus earlier, Aaron kind of compared a lot of these situations to a petulant child. And that perfectly encapsulates the way that Robin Voss leads. It's my way or the highway. Negotiation is for the weak. And actually, I want to quote a friend of the show, The Recombobulation Area from 2022, piece noting that Robin Voss, the longest-serving assembly speaker in Wisconsin's history, had a favorability rating of just 12%. This was in April of 2022. I cannot imagine it has gone up since. His favorability had been polled earlier that year, and it landed at 13%. So, Dan, you noted that this was not an outlier. He is universally unpopular. And we're going to continue this conversation with Dan Schaefer right after the break. Give us a call or shoot us a text if you'd like to participate. 844-967-2789. This is Town Call. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app, calling or texting. Head on over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download. On this Wednesday afternoon, the Wednesdayest Wednesday of the week, we are joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area for some general recombobulation, and we're talking Robin Voss and Wisconsin's trickle-down jerkonomics based off of a piece over by the Bulwark. Before the break, Dan, we were kind of talking about Robin Voss's unique unpopularity, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but could we say his own district? Remember, he had a very competitive primary this year as well from a relatively unknown candidate who was a lot closer to defeating Voss than I think Robin Voss was willing to admit after the fact.
Yeah, and there was even a bill earlier this week that the assembly was introducing, saying that people who lost in the primary would be barred from being a write-in candidate. Did you see this one? So it's hard to see that as anything else than
how
just
are we supposed Voss to read that? Yeah,
being vindictive. Like he's just the most vindictive leader that we have in this state. You know, he just takes these personal slights and makes them into policy. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the primary challenge that he had, you know, I was thinking back to a couple of years ago too, but there was going to be in 2020 when right after Voss, you know, had famously was in full PPE at the polls in that absurd April 2020 election.
Boy, the plastic bubble, but everybody you're safe to go outside.
All of that. You know, there was a challenger that emerged after that to run against him in his district. And that challenger quickly bowed out of the race after there was some threats made to his family. And so it's just like goes to show, you know, how insulated he is from any type of accountability, you know, to his majority through the maps in the district, through the type of smash mouth politics that he brings. And it's just so problematic for the state. And as you mentioned, his approval rating is his favorability rating as per the Marquette University Law School poll is typically under 15%. Now that can look, I will say that looks a little bit skewed because you still have, you know, like 40 to 50% of the state that does not have an opinion on Robin Voss in that polling. But even still, even if you doubled that 12% favorability number, a 24% one isn't very good either.
It's still abysmal.
It's
yeah.
still terrible. And so like he even does not have a ton of support, you know, among Republicans. I just wonder at what point do they make a change? At what point is there going to be another assembly speaker? Because the trickle down jerkonomics is not working for Wisconsin Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly reads like a racket. I mean, this is the type of stuff that, like, mob bosses do. It's like he took the shadow governor tag to heart and was like, I am the emperor behind the scenes. I am the man in the dark who makes these decisions. Don't you dare stand up and run against me. We had an interesting call from James from Racine. James, if your story sounded very interesting, give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'd love to hear that story still. And I think as more and more of these stories come to light, more and more people are starting to recognize how problematic an individual as vindictive and as petty as Robin Voss in this position of power can be. We've talked about his incredibly, incredibly low favorability time and time again. But Dan, you noted the sore loser bill, which bars candidates who falter in primaries to run write-in campaigns. It would stipulate that, quote, no candidate losing in the partisan primary may file a registration statement to have write-in votes for the candidate counted in the general election. This cannot be read in any other way other than Robin Voss is mad that he received a primary challenge. Someone dared to step up to his authority, and now he's going to punish you for it. In what way is this beneficial to the long-term health of democracy by not allowing people to run? If you're confident in yourself and your campaign, you should want as many people to run as possible. But of course, he's not confident in himself or his campaign. He just wants to consolidate his power.
It is, as the piece, as the Bulwark piece says, governance by temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
It is, no. That is the approach that we see from Voss. It is governance by temper tantrum. Someday he is not going to be the assembly speaker, and I will throw a party the day that happens.
Someday, but unfortunately that day is not today. Dan, one other piece that I wanted to touch on. We got a couple more minutes before the end of the show that as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, this is right up Dan's alley. I'm going to have to ask him about it. So I figured I'd throw you under the bus and ask you about it live on air, reading over from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I-94 construction project in Milwaukee County begins Thursday, $59.7 million approved for work. As my resident expert on all things Milwaukee, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we have these highway projects for tens of millions of dollars to reconstruct these highways and nobody ever bats an eyelash, right? We have
can't afford childcare, but here we're fine.
Right. Or we have, you know, just in comparison to transit projects in particular, you know, we have talk about, we've heard endlessly about the streetcar. We've heard endlessly about how much of a boondoggle it would have been to accept, you know, $800 million in federal funding for a train through the state of Wisconsin. We've heard, we always hear about, you know, the ongoing costs for maintenance for trains or buses or transit. But we don't really hear much about the tens of millions of dollars it will cost to reconstruct highways. Now, I'm not saying I'm opposed to maintaining roads and bridges. I think this is, you know, ultimately a good thing for the state and the region in the long term. 894, diverting some of the traffic that would come through the city, especially, you know, semi-trucks and things of that nature. Diverting that traffic to go straight through towards Illinois, towards southeastern Wisconsin. That's a good thing. We should maintain our roads and bridges. But at the same time, I think the way that we talk about these projects and the ongoing maintenance costs of tens of millions of dollars every couple decades for these highways, we need to pull that into context, especially in comparison to when we talk about transit projects as well.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Thanks, Dan. Dan, we're running towards the end of the show. Where can people find you if they are interested in getting a little bit more of the Dan Schaefer experience?
You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, and you can find us at therecombobulationarea.news. We've got a new URL there. So you can actually share the link on Twitter now, which you couldn't before. So you know, it's a good thing. Recombobulationarea.news.
And glad you mentioned Twitter, Dan, because Dan is one of my favorite Twitter follows. If you need to know anything about Wisconsin politics or Milwaukee politics in particular, you're going to want to head over and follow that account because he is on top of everything. Thanks for joining us today, Dan, for some general recombobulation on a Wednesday. We got office hours with Professor John Shelton tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody, today. Take it easy, party people.
We'll catch you tomorrow.
Gotta be so mean.